This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Our special guest today is Mike Cantu. Mike has worn a lot of hats: real estate investor, entrepreneur, property manager, sometimes speaker, and full-time capitalist. Mike, welcome back to our show.
Okay.
We had just talked about the three major influential teachers, and we had you just mentioned John Schaub after Jack Miller, and number three.
Now, I can't just name one person as number three, Bruce, because there was a little cluster there of influences that are all equal influence. I was going to say you were in that number three category, along with Ron LeGrand from the wholesaling standpoint and the fix and flip standpoint. Pete Fortunato has been a huge influence, and Jim Napier. Those would be the people I would have to put in the number three as far as influence goes.
That's really good company, so I'm honored. Thanks, I appreciate that.
Oh, no, Bruce, you've been a huge, huge influence over the years. In fact, I was at your February class, wouldn't have missed it for anything.
Yeah, that was it's exciting to have an audience want to listen to your stuff. I didn't expect the ending that I ended up coming up with. So.
Oh, the next day I reread the entire workbook from start to finish, and I thought, well done, Bruce.
I appreciate that.
Now, I came to conclusions many, many years ago, if you go back to the 1989 debacle, and I thought, you know, if I'm going to survive in this business, and there's one known out there, what the market's going to do, and, you know, I've always told people, I have nailed it every single time, I know exactly what's going to happen. one of three things. It's going to go up, down, or stay the same.
Right.
I don't think there's a fourth choice in there. And so my plan has always been to insulate myself that no matter which of the three scenarios happen, I'm okay.
And honestly, you were ready for 2008 probably because of 89 or 90.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In my goal book, there's a quote from Jack Miller. It's written on a little Peppermill Casino tablet note, and it's taped in the front of my goal book, and it said, "A wise man once said, when you have it made, there's no need to take any more chances." Well, I elaborated on that as far as what type of chances I was willing to take, and the personal liability was not one of them. Large balloon payments was not one of them. And so I developed an entire list of things that I'm not willing to do at this point in my real estate career.
That's interesting. I think of all the people that I know in this industry, you actually spend more time in thought. You still have your habit of daily reading.
Bruce, I have been on a reading tear since beginning of December, late November. I know I've read at least 20 books since beginning of December.
Wow. Books you've already read or new books?
All new, 100% new books, Bruce. It was, I think I mentioned to you, a mobile home park, a large mobile home park that me and a lifelong friend got into, and I realized I knew something about that business, but I was not an expert on it. So I have spent the last 4 months getting my hands on everything I possibly could that would give me the education that I wanted in that arena. And now I'm much, much, much more confident.
What's interesting about that, now that's, a lot of people would think, okay, that's a risky investment. So how do you view that as, since you're normally in the home business and this is a little bit different model for sure?
Yes, and this is a lifelong friend I grew up with, and we actually took real estate principles together. He was a diehard Jack Miller student and all the other people, so I would constantly run into market seminars, but he spent his adult life in Tucson, and that's what he's done. I've watched him from a distance. We've always talked regularly. He's one of my favorite people. And I told him I may be interested in an opportunity if the right one comes along, and I shot down several of them. But the deal that we ended up doing, Bruce, he had actually been chasing for almost 20 years. And when it came on the table, the deal that between the two of us put together, I thought that was one of my best deals I've ever done. And we ended up buying somewhere between 40 and 50 cents on the dollar with seller financing at 5% for 15 years. Payments didn't start till 4 months after we closed. And it had all of the right things wrong with it. The upside is several million dollars. But it, once again, it's the cash flow that I'm after from that deal.
Okay. What's different about that product than houses? I mean, how do you look at that investment differently than you do, okay, I want to buy this rental house?
I'm nothing but humored by it, Bruce. Every day I just think, wow, what a different segment of society I've been exposed to. It's a different rung on the housing ladder, that's for darn sure. And I realize it's a business, and there's a lot more moving parts. And, Bruce, I would never have got involved in something like that had Mark not done that for his entire adult life. And he actually lives 4 miles from that property.
Okay.
So he's 5 minutes from there, and he starts every day there. And it's, we've come a long, long ways in the 5 months that we've owned it.
And he pursued that for 20 years. That's, I guess that's amazing.
Yeah, he has a list of parks that he just loves in the Tucson area, and it's a short list, and that was one of them.
Okay. The area in Florida that I'm in, Leesburg, actually has that type of product. And I don't know anything about it, so I guess I better borrow some books.
Yes, and there is some really good education out there, and there's some garbage, as always, just like the rest of the real estate world.
One of the things that's interesting about how you've done this business is that you do most of what you do over the phone. You do not go out of your way to physically meet with owners, where I think the great majority of other people do meet the owners. So how did you land on that square, and why do you feel like that's been best for you to do?
Well, it started out, Bruce, with the absentee owner mailings 20-plus years, almost 20 years ago, and I realized that when someone lives in a different state, it's not going to happen face-to-face, and the best I can do is written correspondence and follow up with a verbal correspondence. If I was dealing with owner-occupants in my own local market here, that would certainly be a different MO. And occasionally I do get in front of somebody, but it's very rare. So it's usually been the distance between them and me, we end up on the phone.
Okay. You've mentioned goals a number of times. So still a new goal list for 2017?
Oh, absolutely, Bruce. It's interesting you mention that, because just last week I upgraded a new notebook. My old green one had duct tape all over the spine of it and layers of duct tape holding it together, and I thought, this thing is almost embarrassing looking now. So I went out and bought a brand new notebook, and I have spent the last week on cleaning up the pages, and I will always have goals, Bruce. As long as I'm on this planet, there will be goals in front of me.
What effect has that had for you?
A huge, huge, huge impact on my life, because I've had the short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals, and my daily planner, every day, the stuff that I put in there, I look at my one-month goal, 3- and 6-month goals, and in order to chip away at those, I've got every day I'm doing something that affects those, and I have lots of lists and lots of goals, and every day it's about trying to check some of them off. I categorize my day. I realized a long time ago there's only, in a business world, there's only three things that you can really do: call, do, or go. And everything seems to fit into one of those three categories, and I have vertical columns for those. And then to the left of that, the top third is urgent, the middle is important, and the bottom third is miscellaneous. So I try and focus on the top two-thirds and chip away at the long-term stuff. In fact, before we talked, Bruce, I was cleaning up some lists that I'm going to have Kim type up this afternoon that are going in my goal book.
your original goal list, what was the one of the items on there?
Well, I'm going to share two of them, Bruce. Okay, the first goal I ever put down in writing on a 3x5 card, and the book I was reading, it was Joe Cardo's Lazy Man's Way to Riches, and he says you state these as if they've already happened. So my first goal card said, I, Mike Cantu, am the proud owner of 4 retreads that I have gotten off layaway at J&J Tires. I have paid the $60 balance in full. That was the first card. And then I realized that I was going to be a businessman, and I figured businessmen wear suits. And the next goal card said, I, Mike Cantu, am the proud owner of not one, but 2 business suits. I never accomplished that goal, Bruce. To this day, I don't have a suit. I have rented many tuxedos over the years. I do have a sport coat and a nice dress shirt combo, but no suits. Never got that one.
When you look at your goal list, would you say that there is a predominance of financial stuff, or does it cross over into lots of other categories?
Oh, it definitely. I have my business goals and my personal goals, and very few of my personal goals have dollars attached to them.
So just some type of self-improvement, that type of thing?
And then there's leisure goals. I mean, for the last 6 years, Bruce, ever since I've had my place in Huntington Beach, I've had a goal of surfing at least 100 times each year.
Okay.
Getting my wetsuit on and paddling out at least 100 times.
One of the things that you and I talked about is when the downturn came. I remember you making a statement that you saw a lot of people's character change.
Yes, I did. I did. I did.
And I remember making a statement at the time. I said, I don't know that it's changed, but it got revealed.
And you really shed light on that, Bruce. You said, no, that's the real character coming out. That's the real person you're seeing now.
You know, whenever I do business with people, I mean, I have never had anybody come up to me and hand me their business card and say, you know, when the going gets tough, I basically split and I'm going to leave you hanging. That's never been on their business card.
Right. Same here.
Yeah.
I did watch a lot of people disappear and leave other people hanging.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's the one thing I remember being most impressed about. I remember Mick Blackwell talking, you were talking about the problem, and he referred to a promise on a promissory note saying, I don't see any way around that one.
Exactly. I thought, you know, after 6-8 months of doing battle with that, and I thought, we're come far enough, let's just fold this tin up and put it into bankruptcy and let the court wipe it clean and I'll get on with my life. And that's when Mick sat me down and explained to me that we did sign a promissory note that says I promised to pay. But it was the big impact was when he explained that there was a lot of people out there that had taken a leap of faith with us, that they had skimped and saved and put money aside and invested it in hopes of a better tomorrow, and Mick's going to be no part of telling them that their tomorrow's no better than today because the money's not going to be there.
Yeah, I mean, I can count on not too many fingers the character of, you know, that of Mick at that time. That was probably a huge influence, and
I wasn't too happy about that news, Bruce. I was not too happy at all. I thought, wow, okay, I get to keep working.
Yeah. Well, what did you learn about yourself during that stretch?
I can tell you this, Bruce. The person that came out the other end of that tunnel was not the same person that started at the beginning of that tunnel. That I was a completely different person from a standpoint of what's possible, what I'm capable of, and what I'm willing to do in the future. I ended up with more lessons in life and notes to myself over that 18-month cleanup period than just about any other time, to where I thought, no, I've got to stick to this because if I do this, this can happen, and tried to eliminate a lot of things that could take me down after that.
That's interesting. It wasn't just about you knew you could go through and gut it out, but you also made a to-do list or a not-to-do list so in 2008 you wouldn't have to repeat the experience.
Oh, exactly. And I think the what not-to-do list is equally as important as any to-do list ever is.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And that was tough when you have... I remember during that time, you know, when I wrote this thing called A Crash, we were at the peak and everything was great. And then when it started to change in 07 and really got bad in 08, you know, I'd have people come up and say, you know, I lost $1 million. I gotta hurry up and get it back. You know, and I'm just like, that's a bad plan. You know,
Well, Bruce, I remember you kept asking me on a regular basis, are you disappointed you didn't sell out? And I kept saying, no, no, no. And then eventually you quit asking me, and that answer is still absolutely not. I am thrilled that I have what I have. And, yeah, I explained to you why, that if I did cash it out, first and foremost, you take federal taxes out at 15%, the state taxes at 10%, the recapture of depreciation, 10% sales cost. I would have had to buy back in at 60 cents on the dollar just to break even, and we were talking about a portfolio that took an adult lifetime to put together. And looking back, I just smile, thinking, no, I'm so glad. I remember when I told you I was just sweeping everything off the table and starting a new pile, and you kind of gave me a strange look, but I thought, nope, that's the plan I came up with, and it worked out just fine.
No, it did. You know, it's very interesting, and I think you're one of the few people that had that type of property. So, you know, there's Rick Solis has just gone through a bunch of property sales. And he's very happy to have gotten that accomplished, but those rentals were not in A locations. They were a headache.
Oh no, I remember seeing pictures. He sent me pictures of some of them as he was emptying them out, and that all goes back to the right house in the right neighborhood, which at this point I've got to salute John Schaub for exposing me to that theory. That was probably the biggest game changer, Bruce. And fortunately for me, early on, the third house that I ever bought was actually a neighborhood, double cul-de-sac, 1,300 square feet, the right school district, everything else, and I still own that house to this day, and I use that as my model. Okay, this is not this, so it's not, this is a tool, not a part.
Yeah, I really like that. I like that. You've always had an assignment that you've given to properties. And
absolutely.
I've adopted that when I come across either a project or a property. I think about that is like, what's the property's job? So what are you typically doing right now? Are you still pursuing some single families? And what are the various assignments that could be attached to that property?
Well, I'm going to, that was multiple questions, so I'll attack one of them first.
Okay.
But the latest assignment, a free and clear house, is when I signed up for the mobile home park deal, we went over a budget, and rather than borrow money, I realized it was going to need a cash infusion for the next 18 months to rehab any park-owned trailers and get them sold, and to bring in, it's out of 106 spaces, there was 28 vacant spaces, and realizing that the budget I put out there was 20 grand a month, and I just combed through the rental properties, and I said, you, okay, this is your new job, and that one's handled. So, I gave them new assignments. I still have my basic core pile of stuff that covers my life expenses, and, yeah, when you get enough properties, eventually all the basic stuff is covered, and you think, okay, what do you do with the rest of it? Okay, debt reduction, then eventually you run out of debt, then I guess it piles up if you don't spend it. But then you have also asked, Bruce, what am I doing now? And I am still buying and selling houses. I'm getting a real kick out of it because my brother is back in the real estate game full time. I talk to him almost every day about his deals and what's going on. And he's a great deal maker. And I like him to make the deal and me to make it go away. So I'm placing these houses. I've got my neighbor, Justin, who I've worked with for many years, I think of him as my protege. He's a real hustler. I've got him out on the streets every day. And between my efforts, Justin and Dave, I seem to be doing about three deals a month, and it's been that way for several years now, down from my usual volume. But Bruce, at 56, I don't work nearly as much as I used to.
I think one of the things that's happened too, and I don't know if this was by plan, but you're sort of a core go-to person. So you hear from a lot of people that have, okay, what do I do with this? But they have found something of value, and you kind of have gotten in the middle of that where you're like, what do you call it? You kind of
the traffic cop.
You're a traffic cop.
Directing traffic.
Exactly.
Absolutely, Bruce. And I think of it as my pimp fee for parking it. I've got different arrangements with different people, but yeah, a lot of my deals are other people's deals that, exactly as you described, there's value there, but they don't have a taker for it.
Well, I can tell you it's probably been longer than that, but it's been a few years ago, you flip one to Aaron, and I think sometime in the summer, he's going to cash over $100,000 check for that one. So I thank you.
And that thrills me, Bruce. I get so happy because I realize when I let something go on a wholesale level, I've gone through the whole analysis. Is this something that I want in my life on a day-to-day basis? Is this something I want to babysit? Is this something that I want to rehab? Is this something that I want to drive to if I have to? And as I've gotten older, most of those answers are no, no, and no. But yet, from the parts and tools standpoint, this is a tool that will generate a chunk of money. I remember that was actually one of my daughter's properties. The mailer we did was for her, and we tied the thing up, and Aaron bought it, and you know, I've asked him a few times, still have that house, and he smiles every time I see just about every tooth in his mouth when he says, yes, I do. And I'm thrilled to hear that, Bruce, because a lot of other people in my world have cashed out big on stuff that I've sold them. But looking back, I'm thinking, I wouldn't have wanted taken that journey with that property and several others. I look at Nick Blackwell's in-game portfolio. I do have a list of his houses that he's given me over the years. I seem to get a new updated list annually, what he owes, and the properties on there. And there's about 50 houses on there still. And as I go through it, I think all but six of them, I ended up selling to Mick.
Okay.
And so a huge part of his net worth came from deals that I did, but I wouldn't be where I'm at now had I not sold those to him or somebody else.
Which kind of just jogged my memory. You definitely at one point had a goal of owning stuff free and clear, and Mick wasn't too thrilled about that one.
Exactly. I do remember the story when Mick sold his apartments and was doing a 1031 exchange, and he came to me and asked me for 20 houses, and I put 10 on the table, and we ended up settling at 14. And I was just south of $1 million in combined checks when they closed. And I remember I got the money, and I ran into Mick 2 days later, and he was all excited and asked me what I was going to do with all that money. And I told him I spent it. And then he got really excited and said, "What'd you buy?" And I said, "Nothing." And then he got very concerned and said, "What happened?" And I said that I paid off 9 more houses. And I remember watching his face slowly wad up like a piece of tinfoil, Bruce. It was not a pretty sight. And with the most disgusted tone I have ever heard out of his mouth to this day, he said, "I don't remember what seminar it was that we went to that told you to take your hard-earned after-tax dollars and pay off positive cash flow, single-digit, fixed-rate, cash flowing loans. Can you refresh my memory?" And Bruce, I walked around for 2 days studying my shoelaces, so disappointed in myself, thinking I blew it again. And I'll never forget that Saturday. I had a big day planned, a bunch of work, going to several jobs, and I woke up to the rain coming down sideways, hitting my window. And when I woke up, I just got the biggest smile on my face. You could not have removed it with a tow truck. I thought, I am free. I am financially free. Several times what I need to comes in monthly passively that I need to live on, and I don't have to do anything I don't want to do work-related for the rest of my life. And, you know, the old joke was, I have paid off many, many houses since then. I just don't tell Mick.
Without...
And it's interesting because now he's at a point where he's clearing his debt right and left, and I just chose that path a lot sooner.
Yeah, that's a great feeling, and you've been a big influence on me to do the same thing. So, Mike, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. And
oh, it's always a pleasure, Bruce. I can't believe how fast the time went by.
All right, Mike. Thanks again.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.